Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're discussing 2002's Tiptoes, directed by Matthew Bright and starring Gary Oldman, Kate Beckinsale, and Matthew McConaughey. But before we do that, we got a quick announcement. Next week will be a new era for the dudes. We're going to get a fresh coat of paint, aren't we, Dave?
That's right, dude. We have we have new everything. You're going to love it.
Yeah. New logo, new theme song. It's all coming. It's all coming together. We mentioned it on our yearly recap episode and going forward looking episode.
Right.
So it's happening.
Yes.
So be prepared for that.
Yes.
But before we talk about this episode, Tiptoes, Dave, let's talk about what we've been watching.
Sure.
Dave, what have you been watching?
I watched a pre-code film from 1933 called Babyface. It stars Barbara Stanwyck. And it's about a young woman who realizes that because men are idiots, she can just get whatever she wants using her physical beauty.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun. It's great. And I think I'm about to go on a long Barbara Stanwyck palooza because she's amazing.
I've seen Babyface.
Excellent.
It's excellent.
Yes. Isn't it good?
It's really good. Pre-code is where it's at, man.
It really is. It's just the best place. And it's great stuff. So check it out, everybody.
That's awesome.
Yep.
I watched something, Dave. It's been a long time coming. I watched My Fair Lady with Audrey Hepburn and Rex Harrison.
Okay.
I had to get to it eventually.
Yeah.
And I finally did. I finally got out of the way.
Okay.
If I have to hear Rex Harrison sing one more note, I'm going to freak, okay?
Dude. I am so... I always want you to watch musicals, and then you end up with My Fair Lady, and...
This is why I hate musicals.
I know.
This movie... Everyone's just bursting into songs, fancy pantsing around the whole time. Yes. No, I don't care, Rex. I don't care about your language studies or your bet. Audrey Hepburn, I don't care about your flowers. Just stop singing already. Just stop.
Dude, I have no defense for it.
I'll give credit to Hepburn's performance. It's really good. It's charming. It's lovely. And she's great and everything. I love her. She's still my dream woman. But just shut your yap.
Yes. You know, it's probably going to make it even worse for you when you realize. I mean, I'm sure you looked at who the other nominees for Best Actor were that year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, Strangelove was in this year.
Peter Sellers lost to Rex Harrison.
It's insane, everybody.
The biggest thievery I've ever seen.
He gives such a lazy performance in this movie. I can't believe it beat Peter Sellers.
I know. Yeah.
And I can understand why it lost Best Picture to this movie, because this is what everyone wanted at the time, right? Like, at least the Hollywood Oscar people were voting for things like My Fair Lady.
Right.
But man, Strangelove, way better. I know sensibilities change.
Well, but it's also just, I mean, like, whether it's 1964 or today, I mean, that... You know, you should vote for the best picture. You know, it should not be about, you know, whether we're celebrating Hollywood or not.
Right.
I mean, it needs to be, hey, what was the best movie, the most important movie, the movie that's going to, like, you know, stand up and still be relevant six decades from now. My yeah. God, everybody, My Fair Lady, what are you thinking?
It's hard to do that, though, right? No one has a crystal ball.
I guess not.
This was a time before that kind of started happening, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I would say maybe when Midnight Cowboy comes along, they kind of change their tune.
Right. It wasn't as much of an activist time in that moment, yeah.
At least in Hollywood.
Right.
All right, so I'll stop yapping about My Fair Lady.
Very well, dude.
If you like musicals, you'll love it. If you hate musicals, you'll hate it. So, right. Now let's talk about another movie, Dave. That is really something else.
Uh-huh.
It's called Tiptoes. Why don't you give everyone a synopsis?
Well, dude, I sat down trying to come up with, like, an anti-synopsis for the movie. Because this film is so infamous, I thought it called for it.
Yeah.
Then I realized the reason this movie has a place in film history is because it gets special treatment from the likes of us, having... been such an embarrassment, so I then decided to put together a normal synopsis like usual.
Okay.
Then I realized the fallacy of this whole exercise, because we're doing a whole podcast about this movie, so my little sermon during what's supposed to be the synopsis doesn't mean shit if we give this terrible film more attention. So in the end, the whole thing kind of caved in on itself like an event horizon.
Oh, man.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is not bullshit. The movie we're going to talk about today is truly embarrassing. And I promise I'll give you your synopsis in just a minute, but I wanted you to know up front what you were in for. So that out of the way, Tiptoes, everybody, tells the story of a young man who's engaged to be married, but he hasn't told his fiance that his whole family, including his twin brother, are all little people. His fiance discovers the news about the family right when she finds out that she is pregnant, which causes stress for everybody because of the possible, you know, medical complications. And then everyone has to deal with the fallout. So we're going to try and talk about this, and we're going to try and do it in a way that, like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in this show.
Yeah.
You know, God only knows.
Let's give some background on why we're doing this, I guess. Someone that we worked with asked if we had seen this, and neither of us had.
Right.
And they said we should do it on the show. That was years ago. And now it's finally come time. curiosity got to me. I threw this on the schedule.
Uh-huh.
I think Dave didn't want to. Right. But it's like, it's time, though. Gary Oldman has to pay his dues.
Yes.
He has to take his talking to.
Uh-huh.
So here we are, everybody, watching this anomaly of a film. And if you don't know, Gary Oldman, acclaimed British actor, is playing a little person in this film. It's pretty bad stuff.
Yes.
Especially in 2002, and we weren't doing the best with this kind of stuff back then. If you ask me, a lot of the movies were still using a lot of bad stuff in it.
Sure.
And nowadays, almost 25 years later, there's a lot of issues here.
Right.
That is definitely unacceptable today's.
And I mean, I think at that point we were probably still, I think most people were still pretty aware that what they did in this movie was bad. I mean, like, you know,
right.
A lot of people reacted like, you know, hey, what are you guys doing?
Exactly.
But they must have felt in that time that they had a right to do it, which is really troubling.
Yeah. One thing I feel like the movie was trying to say something and be like an advocate for little people.
Right.
But it all comes off so insincere,
mm-hmm,
and just wrong-headed. The intent is so off the mark.
I know.
It just comes out as a mess. Not only was it like a studio botch job, apparently.
Right.
There was a director's cut that was way better, if you can imagine.
supposedly it's 150 minutes.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine a 2.5 hour movie version of this movie. I mean, holy shit.
But yeah, it's trying to do something noble, and it is just not.
I mean, dude, there might not be a way to make this movie good exactly, but there was a way to make it at least defensible, I think.
Yeah.
As you referenced about Gary Oldman, and as we've talked about in this show, he is my and many other people's like all-time favorite actor.
Mm-hmm.
But even if he gives a decent performance here, which he does in places, just from pure acting standpoint, mm-hmm, he has no business playing a little person. And if the filmmakers had cast Peter Dinklage, an actor who was available and already in their movie as the Rolf character, we're now talking about a pardonable, if flawed, movie instead of a legendarily offensive fiasco.
Yes, exactly.
And also what you said about the statements the movie's trying to make. I mean, that the movie attempts to tackle issues about the rights of little people and tries to talk about discrimination that they face and the various physical issues. It is admirable, but they cast Gary Oldman in the leading role. So any attempts to get into these issues is meaningless because they discriminated against little people themselves just in the production of the film.
It is. And not just that aspect of it is horrendous.
Yes.
The movie really is an utter disaster.
Even apart
from a filmmaking standpoint.
I know.
It makes no sense in half of the things that happen.
Because what if it was like as offensive as it is, but it was like capably made? You know, like,
yeah.
Okay, that's something.
I'm going to say it right here. Like, it feels cheap.
Yeah.
The movie feels like a low budget, it's like student film level. It's Tommy Wiseau shit.
It is.
It feels like The Room.
I know.
I wouldn't say it's as bad production-wise as that film is.
It's more polished.
It's very polished, and it.
Right.
It's just the script makes no sense in tons of places. There's superfluous characters that have prominence throughout the film that mean nothing.
I know.
And we're totally wasted. Like we're saying, Peter Dinklage's character in this movie shouldn't even be here. Patricia Arquette's character shouldn't even be here.
I know.
They make no sense.
And they have like a side. They have a B plot that where sometimes it focuses just on them.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the rest of the story.
I thought maybe they were supposed to be the Greek chorus or something,
okay.
Commenting on what's happening. But it's not really taking that role.
There's a 5-minute scene of just them in the park together, like, and it looks like it's their movie.
Exactly.
It's
they're
probably
talking
the best
about marriage
scene in the movie. Yeah.
And like Dinklage gives a great line, like, "I don't believe in marriage. It turns a lover into a relative," which
yes.
is a great line, I think, from a French Marxist.
Of course,
you know?
Exactly, because he thinks marriage is bourgeois.
But it has no place in this film.
Okay. In addition to the superfluous characters and just like the production errors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this movie is full of, and they're way worse than Sphere, you know, because it's a lot of it's really
yeah.
basic shit.
Yeah.
During the first scene where Stephen and Carol are in bed together, it's Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale's characters. I don't know if they didn't have a boom mic or what, but the actors are speaking barely above a whisper.
Yeah.
And you cannot hear what they're saying.
I rewound this DVD twice at one scene, and I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Unless you turn the subtitles on, you got nothing.
I was like, screw it. If they're not making an effort, I'm not making an effort.
That's fair, because it wasn't important to begin with.
Right.
But like, I don't know what Matthew McConaughey thought he was doing, but he's speaking. It's not a whisper. I mean, that is what he's doing on film.
He's like a baby gasping for air.
I couldn't believe it.
Dude.
And I can't believe, you know, and the whole thing about like, you know, oh, Matthew Bright was like 86th from the Sundance Film Festival. They had to pull him out of there physically remove him because he was like, you know, going on and on about how the studio like, you know, ripped his film out of his hands and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, dude, you made Tiptoes. You have no legacy.
He turned in his cut, this legendary director's cut, apparently.
Right.
And they fired him after he delivered it.
Can you imagine?
How did he make it that long?
Dude, like, Nathan Rabin from the AV Club, he had a feature called the Silly Little Showbiz Book Club,
mm-hmm.
in which he reviewed, shitty Hollywood memoirs. And one of them was David Lee Roth's Crazy from the Heat. And in the acknowledgments of the book, David Lee Roth talks about how he couldn't have done this without his editor, who took this 1,200 page memoir that I turned in, and he made it into a 350 page readable thing. I was like, 1,200.
Wow.
Can you imagine reading David Lee Roth's memoirs? That's
wow.
1,200 pages.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. I mean, holy shit!
Imagine the tangents.
Yes. Yes.
And the skiddly debops that are written down
exactly.
throughout. Like,
and the nonstop, like, just talking about, like, how great he is.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And that to me, is, it's maybe Matthew Bright's, you know, like, director's cut of Tiptoes isn't quite as indulgent, but I can't imagine it's the masterpiece he's claiming it is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and Peter Dinklage apparently says that the director's cut was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Because he saw it.
Right.
I think in Austin, they did a screening of it.
Yeah.
And he says it was gorgeous. And then the studio did what they did to it, and we got what we got now. And he said that it changed what they were fighting for while they were making the movie. They were, like, fighting against the cutesiness, quote-unquote, of little people.
Mm.
Like, actually making it a real thing.
Okay.
Not just saying, hey, look at them.
Right.
Hey, look at us. But I don't know how much I believe of that. But I watched a behind-the-scenes featurette thing on YouTube about this, and they're talking about Kate Beckinsale is like praising the makeup and Gary Oldman's praising the makeup that he had to wear.
Yes.
And how he's sitting on the couch and they had fake little legs hanging off the couch while he's sitting inside of the couch poked through a cushion. And I'm like, are you kidding? This is not like great special effects. No. This is horrible shit. What are you doing?
If you watch like the public access spoofs on Tim and Eric, that's what it looks like. You see, like, you know, like Patton Oswalt and Rainn Wilson playing little kids.
Yes.
That's what it looks like. Yes. It's the same effect.
Yes. There's these like Raggedy Ann puppet feet hanging off the couch.
Yes, exactly.
Like, come on.
I know that does not look real. It does not look real.
No.
And they achieve the effect of Gary Oldman being a little person mostly by having him walk on his knees. And film him
above the waist.
And they film him mostly above the waist. Yeah. And sometimes he wears, like you said, those prosthetics that hide his real legs. They also use a double in some shots.
Yeah.
Like when they're showing him from behind. And when he's doing his walk, when they're showing him just like above the waist, he's walking with a cane. And he's doing the limp, the you see sometimes little people have to do.
Yeah.
And he's trying his best to make it look realistic, but it's barely manageable for him, the actor, because he's on his knees.
Right.
And he can't really walk a great distance. I mean, like, you see him, he'll walk like 6 feet and then they cut.
Right. And I think the cane thing was probably added after the fact, like, hey, he's on his knees. He can't walk naturally like someone on their feet.
Right.
So give him a cane.
Yeah.
So that way it explains why he walks like that.
Yes.
But, dude, there's a scene where you can see his legs even in this movie.
Yeah.
You see him under the coffee table. You're like, guys, how did you miss this? This is such an important thing you're trying to cover up.
I know.
How can you miss that?
Yeah. So I don't believe for a second that Matthew Bright turned in some kind of great film. If the rest of what the studio like culled down has this many technical errors in it.
Dude, because I mean, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, working on the movie was kind of a nightmare production.
Okay.
I don't know any details, but apparently it was rough, and Matthew Bright isn't the easiest director to work with either, apparently.
Well, I guess if there's someone who came up with this story, you know, and the way they executed that story was this manner. I mean, he probably isn't the best person to begin with.
Right.
Because he hasn't worked since, apparently. I mean, look at his filmography. No, it stops at Tiptoes.
And he made Freeway before this,
yes,
which is a good movie.
It is.
And, but, I mean, it's not like a masterpiece or anything, but...
Right.
Yeah, I guess he likes to swing at things, and this is what he swung at. Yes. He decided to swing at this movie.
Yes, this was his blank check, apparently.
Yeah. Should we start talking about the plot, you think?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
I'm sure we'll go on more about this kind of stuff as it comes up throughout the plot.
Right.
But everybody, the movie starts off, Gary Oldman and Peter Dinklage are riding motorcycles across country, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And their characters' names are Rolf, that's Gary Oldman, and Maurice is Peter Dinklage, the French Marxist. I don't know why he has to be French. But
didn't get that. Yeah. My wife just asked the question while we're watching it. Why is he French? I said, I don't know.
Right. But they're on the highway and they see Patricia Arquette get dropped off by a bus.
Yeah.
And they pull up and pick her up and give her a ride.
Right.
So now she's part of their biker gang, I guess.
Yes.
And the title card, by the way, Dave, it says Tiptoes as they're driving away. And the O stretches, elongates for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it offends me.
Okay, dude.
I'm like, are you trying to make little people bigger for some reason? Like, I don't get it. Why does that affect on it?
Why is it called Tiptoes?
Yeah. Well, I guess Matthew McConaughey is tiptoeing around the fact that he's hiding his family from Kate Beckinsale.
That's one explanation, all right. Okay.
I just pulled that out of my ass.
Okay, fine.
Matthew Bright, you can use it if you want.
There you go. Exactly.
But I don't think that's why. I think there's some kind of hidden meaning about trying to be on your tiptoes and be taller or something like that. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I just hate the word tiptoes.
Tiptoes in is general. Kind of gross anyway.
It's a gross word. It's one of these phrases in the English language that I can just do without. And so when I have a movie called that, and now it's on our show, and we have to keep saying it, I'm just like, fuck.
What if there's a movie called Moist?
You know what? Moist is a fine word.
I love Moist.
I'm okay with that. I know a lot of people are grossed out by it, but I mean, you know, like, I think it's a better word than tiptoes.
I agree. In the rankings, it wins.
Yes, exactly. Jesus. And by the way, also, this opening scene, like, it's one of the first technical errors because...
Right off the bat.
After that terrible, like, credit card with the extent, with the elongated O, we cut to, like, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale, which goes on for a few minutes. And then there's this cutaway. Now, the opening credits happens, and, like... they cut back to Peter Dinklage and Gary Oldman, and the credits continue.
Yeah, I know!
What the fuck was that?
It was so weird.
I just was like, oh, no, the credits are over, Matthew.
We gotta cut back to them taking a leak while the credits play some more.
And the Peter Dinklage credit is right over him.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he had something in his contract. Well, I need my name to appear when I'm on screen. And then the filmmaker's just like, well, fuck it.
I mean, yes, I know.
We're making tiptoes. Who gives
exactly.
a fuck?
Yes, yeah. Yes. This is the worst movie ever made, so let's go with it.
It's been compared to The Room.
Yes.
By dudes on movies. Okay, but, all right. McConaughey and Beckinsale are a couple, right? They live together. I'm assuming they live together.
Yeah.
His name is Steven. Her name's Carol. And she's painting something, and he comes in. He's like, hey, I've got to go to that thing tonight. Remember, I told you. And she says, oh, you mean that thing you're not telling me anything about and you're keeping a secret? Like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of what she's getting at.
Yeah.
And then she's like, no, you're not going. Let me give you an almost blowjob on the camera.
I have to say this, and I hate to burden the record this way, but this was a rating-saving cutaway that they made. Because when she jerks his pants down, Matthew McConaughey is fully erect.
Wait, not in this cut.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
In this cut.
Okay, I wasn't looking.
I was.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me, it's there. He's wearing his tidy whities, and, like, it's only on screen for half a second, but trust me, it's there. And I don't blame the guy, because in that moment, he wasn't acting. Like, it's just Kate Beckinsale pulling his pants down.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably an issue for most guys.
Sure,
right. Yeah.
Right. And it reminded me of, like, you know, when we were talking about the May-December on our Oscar show, and Natalie Portman had that great scene where she, like, explains that, like, you know, when you're having a romantic scene with an acting partner, that, like, sometimes there's actual chemistry there.
Right.
I think, because they cut real, I mean, like, the pants come down, and it's just like, there's a really, like, abrupt cutaway. And I was like, oh, God. Yeah, this movie was rated X for a minute, and they saved it just in the nick of time, you know?
I was reminded of Prayer of the Roller Boys when, ironically, Patricia Arquette, who's in this film, almost gives Corey Haim an almost blowjob.
Jesus, man. Okay, you know what? Poor Patricia Arquette.
I know.
Because we need to do a movie that she has been in. That she's done excellent films.
Yes, we'll do a quality film with her.
And we have chosen the two worst films of her career.
Oh, God. I didn't think there'd be that kind of connection with Patricia Arquette, but I guess there is.
I know. And I mean, like, this movie has an impressive cast.
They do, and I'm not going to lie. I think they all give pretty good performances in it.
Yeah.
All of them do pretty good. It's solid.
They do what they can with it.
They do what they can with the material. Yeah. Sometimes it's ridiculous hearing McConaughey scream about how he's quote-unquote a dwarf.
Yes.
Because he's twins with Rolf. I don't get it, McConaughey.
I
hate his character in this film. I'm sure you do, too.
Oh, man,
it's intended to be that way.
We will get into Steven, This guy's trouble.
Big time.
Yes. But he's like the whole thing too, he's being a jerk right from the start. Because in this in this scene where he's almost blown, he keeps telling Carol, don't get paint on me, don't get paint on me, because he's dressed up in like his Sunday best. He's going to a convention that is like for, you know, like it's a benefit.
It's like
for
the,
like,
Little People of America gala or whatever that they hold every year.
It's some kind of charity thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's going there because it's to support his family.
Yeah.
And, like, he has, as we said in the synopsis, he has not revealed. He's keeping it a secret from her.
Right.
You know, he
for some reason, you know, he's embarrassed about it. He doesn't want to get out there.
Right.
I have no clue why. Has he been doing this his entire freaking life?
Yes.
Apparently, for 40 years almost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, about like the him and Gary Oldman being twin brothers. They're, look, everybody, it's obvious that Gary Oldman and Matthew McConaughey are more than 10 years apart, just, you know, like,
I know,
as people.
That's what I was like, they're twins?
Yeah, really? Twins, give me a break.
When Gary Oldman reveals that to Carol later, I'm like, what?
I know. There's no goddamn
way. Because I'm denying the scientific possibility. I know it happens, but it's like, you're way too old.
I know.
Right? There's no way.
I know. It's obvious, like, there's one guy who's 45 and the other guy's 34.
I know.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, it kind of sucks.
Yes.
So he's, from the get-go, when we meet him, he's charming and handsome as hell, because it's Matthew McConaughey, everybody, but he's an asshole, kind of like Matthew McConaughey in a lot of his roles, and sometimes in real life.
Yeah, right.
It's McConaughey.
So, I mean, it's what you get with McConaughey.
Yeah.
But he seems like he's having a good time at this convention. And that's when Rolf shows up, Rolf and Maurice and Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
And they're there like to, you know, participate and everything. And we find out that Rolf is a freelance writer. He's apparently acclaimed in some circles.
Yeah. He's in, big papers in Chicago, LA.
Yeah. He's syndicated. Yeah. Right. And I guess that's what's funding this cross-country trek, you know? Mm-hmm. And we find out also that, like, Peter Dinklage's character, Maurice, is, like, an anarchist. You know, you mentioned how he has these Marxist leanings, and he's there to, you know, like,
get free food and cause trouble.
Exactly right. He throws something through the glass at one point.
I know.
And they kick him out.
And Patricia Arquette is instantly, like, all about this dude.
Right.
Because she's like a free-spirited woman who just is all into him. She's like, man, I love this guy. You know?
Right. But yeah, they end up like, I think that this whole setup is so that we can get Rolf and Steven together for the first time on screen.
Right. And you can tell through their interaction that there's something strained here in this relationship.
Right.
We don't know exactly what yet. They're being cordial. They're talking about where they're going to stay, you know, because they drove in on their motorcycles. And he says, we're going to get a hotel. I might stay with Sally. I don't know. So that's what ends up happening.
Yes.
So they go to the hotel. Dinklage and Arquette are going to get freaky. And there's something that happens. Like, he gets the stomach pains because he's got ulcers.
Right.
And it happens like twice throughout this movie and comes to nothing. There, it doesn't lead to anything.
It doesn't, no. And I think they're trying to document it, because, I mean, I think that, like, when it first happens, you know, Patricia Arquette asks what's wrong, and Rolf says, oh, it's he says little people shit, and it's because he won't take care of himself. And I guess Peter Dinklage is, Maurice isn't doing what he's supposed to do, as, you know, like, he's not taking medication or something.
Yeah, and he's probably just substance abuse constantly. Just not taking care of himself at all.
Yeah, exactly. But heavy booze and everything else.
But that's one of the points they bring up, is that little people deal with extra medical challenges from the rest of the population.
Right.
It's just their physiology. That's how it is.
Yeah.
And they have these issues, and they're addressing it here with the stomach issues.
Yep.
But it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't lead to anything throughout the rest of the film.
Right.
And it's bullshit, and I hate it.
I know.
And I'm sorry.
I know. I do, too.
I'm trying to be restrained a little bit here.
I mean, I know, and I thought that maybe we would have, like, this weird mannered conversation, like we were, you know, like, on
very scholarly.
Exactly. <you know. laughs> But, it's going to be a lot of ranting and raving.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll throw in the scholarly stuff, you
know. We'll try,
just, you know, it'll happen.
Yeah.
But Rolf is being... He leaves. He goes and stays with Sally because he doesn't want to be around this crap.
Yes.
You know?
Sally is like his longtime girlfriend since high school, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. And they're on again, off again.
Yes.
And she treats him like shit, pretty much.
Yeah.
You can get right away.
Yeah.
Because she loves him. I feel like she loves him.
Right.
But she just takes advantage of him and does whatever she wants to do.
Yeah, she asks him for money, and, like, she, you know, I guess is holed up in this, like, I don't know, this, like, love nest, because she's got another man who apparently, like, semi lives there.
She says she only fucked him twice.
Yes.
It's like, what?
She took pity on him and fucked him twice, she said.
Yeah, and they get in a big fight there, which is ridiculous.
This fight scene, I can't watch it. I cannot sit there and watch like what is supposed to be. First of all, it's a grown man beating up a little person, which is ugly as sin. Yeah. Then it's a little person who's not actually a little person, and right. They're doing all these camera tricks to make it like at one point, like Gary Oldman, he's like he bolts out of the door to try to get away,
yeah.
And he's on his stomach, and the guy like pulls him back, and you see Gary Oldman like the top half of him trying to like you know struggle to not go back in the
and he like
room.
Has his cane on the door like pulling the cane up.
Yes,
is this supposed to be funny?
It's supposed to be kind of a madcap fight, yeah, and
yeah,
it's not because they make special mention of this dude being an immigrant, everybody,
yeah.
And it's like he's like and they I don't even know if they mentioned where he's from.
I don't remember.
But they all, it's also like, it's so crazy because, I mean, like, when you watch Living in Oblivion with Peter Dinklage,
yeah.
There's that moment where, like, Steve Buscemi's, like, you know, trying to explain to Peter Dinklage what his part is. And he's like, okay, so you're in this guy's nightmare. And you're like this, and he's like, well what's scary about me? And he's like, well, and
yeah.
The whole point is that he's a little person. And that's kind of weird, everybody.
Right.
And, but he doesn't want to say that to him. Like, that's what's going on here.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And at one point, Sally grabs this boombox and hits the guy in the collarbone with it.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. This boombox is huge.
I know, right?
Like, it. I loved it because it was an awesome smash, but the whole scene is just a farce. The tone of this movie is all over the place.
Yeah, I know.
It's everywhere.
And there's this, and the score.
Oh, God.
I've never seen something that like...
Give me My Fair Lady.
I mean...
For real.
Yeah, no kidding. I know. Yeah.
Rex Harrison, I take it back.
Right. This one tries to punctuate every like emotional beat with a really overly saccharine orchestra. And,
yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. I know what they're going for. I know exactly what they're going for. I was about to say that I don't know. Of course I know. They're just going for the most obvious musical cues you can find.
Right. And then it's just intercut with scenes of, like, Harley Davidson blues rock and roll music and stuff. Like,
I know.
It just all doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It's all over, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I think this same night, when Steven comes home to Carol, he talks to her and won't really say anything about what happened because
right.
He's a jerk. And
yes,
she reveals to him, she says, like, hey, we need to talk. And he's like, right now? Yeah, we need to talk, you freaking idiot. Talk to me.
God damn it.
And he thinks it's going to be about his secret, but she says, I'm pregnant, which is not what he expected.
Mm-hmm.
Caught him off guard.
Right.
And his initial reaction is, fuck this shit. Come on, Matthew McConaughey. Come on, Steven.
I know.
No.
I know.
He's shocked, which you would be shocked in a surprise pregnancy, I'm sure. But... his reaction is so inappropriate, it just stamps the fact that he's an asshole.
And I don't know if the movie wants you to feel that way about him.
I know, right?
You know, because it's almost like painting him as like he's like what he's doing is kind of defensible and he's got his reasons for feeling this way. And I'm like, no, he doesn't.
Yeah, you're exactly.
You know?
Well said. It's like we're supposed to be on his side.
Right.
Which makes no sense. But then there's moments when you're supposed to be on Carol's side, too. It's everywhere.
Well, there's a moment, like, maybe 10 minutes from now when, like, she finds out about Rolf. Because
yeah.
Rolf shows up to their house the next day.
Yeah.
And he's, like, and she doesn't know who he is. And he explains, oh, I'm Steven's twin brother. She's like, what?
Yeah.
And then she finds out from Rolf that, you know, about their whole family.
Right.
And she goes to, Carol goes to Steven's place of business and starts talking to him. And she goes on this rant where she's throwing the word midget around.
Mm-hmm.
She does it like 3 or 4 times. And he keeps telling her it's dwarf. And which is also like not totally correct. You know,
I think it's more acceptable.
It's more
some
acceptable.
Some people accept
yes,
it.
Because
you
can say dwarfism is the
right.
condition. But like she says, oh, I don't care about that. And it's like they're setting up her to be, I guess, antagonistic in this scene, but it's the only one they do it in.
Right. And I don't think it lasts very long, too, because he instantly throws down the asshole card again.
He does.
And just makes you hate him.
Right.
Like, and she's saying things like, weren't you, he's saying, well, I was going to tell you, classic asshole line.
I mean, I was going to tell you, exactly. Well, telling you now.
She's like, when? What?
Right.
And they were talking about the pregnancy, he's like, well, we're supposed to talk about this before it happens. She's like, well, we're talking about it now.
My
he's
God.
Like, well, we don't talk about it after it happens. It's like, Matthew, what?
You know, and this also, like, this particular scene is another of the technical errors, because, like, some of the shots, particularly these outdoor shots, they aren't even in focus. When Kate Beckinsale comes down that hill and walks up to Matthew McConaughey, it's like they get together and it's a two shot, and one of them is soft all the time.
Yeah.
In a two shot.
There's probably a squirrel over there that's, like, focused, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Something like that. No one caught it. Right. No one caught this.
Oh, my God.
My gosh. And she's just going on about it, like, hey, she says something like, well, you don't want to talk about this? We're supposed to get married.
Yeah.
And then he takes it as, wait, you don't want to get married? That's not what she said, dude.
Right.
That is
right.
Not what she said.
Right.
And she's saying, you know, is there a risk? Is there a chance our baby will be a little person? And he says, yeah, you can. It's a chance. Oh, Jesus, there's a chance. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I know.
It's so stupid, Dave.
They're making
it's hard
her,
for me to describe right
well,
now.
Well, and are you reacting to that they're trying to make her seem kind of monstrous in
I'm
this
reacting
moment?
To the ridiculousness of it all.
Okay.
How stupid it is.
The whole premise?
The whole premise.
Okay.
That this guy would be so upset about this.
Okay.
I don't buy it.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, you've had your whole life to accept this, and you haven't. I just don't buy that this guy's like this. I hate him.
I do buy it. I could believe that such a person could exist.
Okay.
You know, and he probably feels like super lucky and super fortunate that, like, it quote didn't happen to him. You know.
Okay.
But
okay.
And he might also feel that. Yeah. And he might also feel like his genes are corrupt.
He's better,
you know,
than them. Maybe you think he feels like that.
Well, I think he. I don't think he thinks he's better than them.
Yeah, that's true, because he's there to support his family.
He is. I think he feels like his genes are polluted somehow.
Okay.
And it's like if you have some kind of deficiency, like if you're someone who has, like, you know, a history of mental illness or whatever, like, you don't want to pass that on to, like, your kids and stuff.
That's true. And he does say things like, yeah, even if our baby is born with dwarfism,
right,
we'll love him. But there's going to be a lot of problems.
Right.
There's pain. There's suffering. There's surgeries. There's all kinds of stuff that could happen.
Yeah.
He fears that.
And he lays that out quite reasonably, like, during one of these scenes. But as we'll get to, when that happens, I mean, like, when they have to face it later on, like, whatever accountability and kind of reason that he had before is just, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like, He completely transforms, and we'll get there, but, you know.
Yeah.
At this point, she's just like, she's now aware of this secret that he didn't want her to know.
Yeah. So everything's out now.
Yes.
There's no secrets.
Right, right.
Even Rolf knows that about the pregnancy now. Like,
yes.
And they go and tell, actually, Rolf takes Carol to his uncle or somebody's
house. Yeah, to Uncle Bobby's house.
Yeah, to talk about the medical aspects of things. He's going to give them doctors to talk to and things like that.
And Uncle Bobby is played by Ed Gale. And there's another actor here, Debbie Lee Carrington.
Yeah.
She plays Kitty. You've
seen
her in a million things.
Yeah. Total Recall.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And she was in a great episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like Mickey's, like, potential love interest.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
And he doesn't end up with her.
Yes, exactly. He blows it.
Yep. That's a great episode.
It was really good.
Mickey and Kramer are so good together.
I know. Yeah, there's an excellent team.
But yeah, they're in here. They're at dinner. And Debbie Lee Carrington is kind of like dating Uncle Bobby or something, right?
I think so, yeah.
She's because at the gala earlier, all the, like, daughters are like, oh, crap, she's coming over here. Look at her boobs.
Yeah,
ugh,
I know.
She just wants to hit on our dad.
Yeah, Miss Thing.
Yeah. So they're all there and they're talking about the issues that can happen and all that. And there is some good stuff here because who is it? Ed Gale.
Ed Gale.
he's saying, you know, there's nothing that precludes being happy or being a productive person if you're a little person.
Like, yes.
There's nothing that says that you can't have happiness. There's nothing that says you can't live a normal life.
Right.
So it's nothing to worry about. Like, there's nothing inherent about it that is going to be bad.
Right. This scene and the one that comes later where Ed Gale and Debbie Lee Carrington are talking to Maurice, like, these are maybe the best scenes in the movie.
Right?
You know?
I agree.
Like,
because this is what they're trying to get across, right?
I know. It's where they're trying to get these issues.
I feel like this is the message they're trying to get into.
Yeah.
And it's only for these 2 30-second parts of the film where it happens.
And they're not really cinematic.
No.
It feels very much like a message, you know, a public service, almost like a PSA. But, like, they're doing it within the confines of a movie or a movie scene. But, like, it would have been better if they'd opened it up and they had, like, given these characters, like, center stage. They're the ones we should be following.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that the movie is about Stephen and Carol and all their hang-ups and whatnot. But, I mean, like, they could have, like, I hope that whatever Matthew Bright turned in originally had, like, way more of Ed Gale and way more of Debbie Lee Carrington.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, more Michael J. Anderson.
Yes.
I mean, come on, man. He's in this movie and he kills it in this.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Twin Peaks. So to see Michael J. Anderson in a prominent speaking role was very cool. Then, unfortunately, when I was doing my research, I found out he's recently taken leave of his senses.
Oh, man.
Yes. He's very online and he posts a lot about his love for Trump and anti-globalism. It's pretty ugly. And the less said, the better, everybody. Don't look into Michael J. Anderson too much.
Oh, man.
Yes.
I just watched Twin Peaks again.
Oh, God. Okay? Yeah. Nothing gold can stay, dude.
oh, dude. That's unfortunate.
It is. Right.
Now we get a phone call from Matthew McConaughey, who's at fire training still.
Yes.
He's like an instructor for firefighters.
Yeah, he trains firefighters.
Yeah. So he calls Carol and she tells him about the lunch or the dinner they had and all this stuff. And hey, there's a party at David Alan Grier's house tomorrow night. So we're going to go there.
I'm gonna go over to Dag's place, dude.
I want you to be there. And he's like, yeah, I'll be there. Something's wrong with my phone. I have no signal. I'll talk to you later. And he hangs up real fast for some reason.
Dude. Okay. You know, this phone conversation, by the way, okay. It's not a technical error, but it's just overall crappy filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because on Carol's end, the camera is focused in on a close up of Kate Beckinsale's pouty lips.
Yep.
Which would be fine if they were talking sexy to each other, but it's just normal couple when are you coming home shit.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they decide to make it seem like Red Shoe Diaries when you're looking at her.
Yeah.
Even though he's standing in a field on a...
He's like sitting on a train tie or something.
Yes, on a flip phone, just talking to his wife.
In the middle of a dark field. And it's like a wide shot of
him.
He's full in the picture, dude.
Right.
And... it doesn't work.
No.
Maybe you could argue it's trying to show how they're not on the same page or something. But I'm not going to fight for that argument because it is not.
Right. That's way deeper than I think
it is just garbage filmmaking.
It is.
And then he gets off the phone because his battery's about to die. I got one bar. Sorry. See you later, honey.
Right, right.
And then he immediately goes to this, like, babe firefighter and is like, you want to go to a party tomorrow night?
I know, right.
And it's like, what?
Yeah.
What is going on here?
I don't know why he invites these two ladies to come
to the party. Because they go to the party. He shows up to the party with these two babes in these sexy dresses. And then that's it.
I know.
They disappear and nothing is ever said again about it.
And, like, Kate Beckinsale walks up to him at the party and he goes, hey. Like, and he's got the babes with him.
Right.
And he's like, hey, this is my wife, Carol. And it's like, what is this?
Is he trying to pull a Fredo or something?
I'm pretty sure he is.
Dude.
And it's kind of gross. And, like, they don't carry on with it, of course. But, like, what is he? He seems very, overly familiar with these ladies.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe it's like his wife or Carol seems real cool with it. I don't know. But, I mean,
she didn't seem like.
Didn't seem put out at all.
Yeah, she just like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. And
right.
Like, shakes their hands and stuff.
Right.
It's like, okay, what was the point of all this? nothing. Yes. I thought he was going to be trying to make her jealous or something because he's in this, like, baby man rage.
Because he seemed mad when he hung up the phone.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure that when he said, my battery's running low, that he was just trying to figure out a way to get out of the conversation.
Yeah.
That's the way the scene plays.
I still feel like it was.
And so what was all this? And,
I don't know.
But when he gets there, it's... Everything is just like, you know,
everything's perfect.
Everything's fine. And like the whole conflict of this part at David Alan Grier's place.
Jerry.
Yes. Jerry. And they keep referring to like Jerry Rubin Jr. Like he's supposed to be like someone we know.
Yeah. Like he's like a big musician, like a famous guy.
He's
or something.
Some celebrity. And it's great because David Alan Grier is having like a moment now.
Uh-huh.
He was in The Color Purple this last year. He's apparently a big star on Broadway right now. I mean, he's like huge.
Oh, I can see that.
And he's also a really good dramatic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fantastic on In Living Color when I was a kid.
Amazing.
He was always the best part of that show.
Yeah.
One of the best parts, I should say.
Yep.
He's here in this movie, like, you know, and in at this at his house, like Rolf's lady friend, Sally.
Yeah.
Takes up with David Alan Grier.
She pulls a Boogie Nights with this guy, dude.
She does.
They're in a glass room.
I know.
With dozens of people just looking through the windows.
Right. This party doesn't seem like it's happening at Jack Horner's place, but then all of a sudden it is.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it seems like a fairly chaste, regular cocktail party, but there is like public sex going on for no reason, just over in the corner.
Maybe there's an Eyes Wide Shut situation happening here.
If there is, then there would have been like tons of it, right? It's not just happening in one corner.
But maybe it kind of sprawled out into the glass menagerie and like you got to go like upstairs to find that.
I see. Sidney Pollack's got something going on over here. I got you. Yes.
We don't want to know what Jerry's got going on at this house. Well, everyone seems like to have this thing like, oh, Jerry's having a party.
Yeah.
You got to go to Jerry's party.
I know. They keep talking about Jerry. Yeah. Like,
oh, man, Jerry's got a party. You got to be there.
Just establish who Jerry is. They keep saying Jerry Rubin like somebody big.
They thank him at that gala from earlier in the movie.
Yeah.
And he gets on stage and does like a weird smile and a ha-ha like, to the crowd. Yes. And like everyone cheers.
Yes.
And that's it.
We don't know who he is.
But yeah.
And Sally is played by Bridget Powers, an adult film actor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I'd seen her something. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, she's there with Rolf and then goes with Jerry.
I know.
Like, screw this girl. Rolf, you don't need Sally. Come on, man.
And they've been together since high school, they say, which, like, if we're to believe Gary Oldman is 33 years old. Okay,
yeah.
So 15 years on again, off again.
Yeah.
When he says, oh, fuck this, he walks away and he's like just a little bit perturbed by the whole situation. His girlfriend, who he's been with for all this time, was like literally fucking a guy in front of a bunch of people, humiliating him. And he just kind of walks away. It's not appropriate. His reaction is inappropriate.
It sucks. I feel like it's because he's been dealing with this same situation since high school, I guess.
I guess,
yeah. She's been treating them like this their whole lives.
That's right.
And he kind of has accepted it. Now, I'm not going to lie. I don't agree with the casting. But Gary Oldman, I think, is pretty solid in the movie.
I agree with you.
He gives a really good performance.
Because he can't help but be good in a movie.
It's Gary Oldman, for crying out loud.
He's a great actor. And he doesn't play it as a little person, really. He's just giving a performance as this person, Rolf.
Yeah, a person who has feelings.
Yes.
And exists.
Right.
So it makes sense. And there's even a scene later in the movie I felt really bad for him. And I like almost got choked up by it.
Okay.
I'm like, man, poor Rolf, man.
Okay.
But still, it's not... It's not nothing to cry about.
I know, exactly, because like it's just no matter how good he is and no matter how much sympathy you have for the character, him playing this role is indefensible.
I know, I'm getting choked up, then I think, oh, well, fuck this movie, though.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what always comes back to.
It's what
right
sucks,
now.
God.
Right.
And Steven and Carol start fighting here, too, because Steven and Rolf are fighting about how he went to their house and revealed all this information. And Gary Oldman says something like, "Are you like ashamed of us or something? Like, what's going on? You need to get therapy. That's another thing in this movie. He keeps being told he needs to talk to somebody, and then he just throws a giant baby man fit every time.
Yes, he does.
Because I'm a man, and I'm not going to therapy.
Steven truly sucks.
Yes.
This guy is shit.
Yes. End sentence. That's
I know,
it.
Right.
Nothing else to say.
Yes.
But yeah, they get in a fight, and then they all leave the party together. Well, Carol, Steven, and Rolf, they leave together.
Right.
And they do kind of make up here, because Rolf says he's going to leave. He's going to get a bus or a taxi or something. And McConaughey is just like, no, dude, come on. You're coming with us.
Yeah, don't be stupid.
Come
just
on.
Come with us. You know, we're family.
Just go.
Right.
I do like the sentiment of that scene.
I do too.
They are making amends in ways here.
Yeah, and it's a really good moment just between, like, you know, hey, like, and Matthew McConaughey is also a good actor.
Yes.
So he knows how to, like, play. It's a good scene between these two guys just, like, making up the way brothers, I guess, would.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of giving each other shit for a minute, and then just in the end they love each other
right.
and they're gonna be together.
Like, the next morning I'd love if he came out and made him a bunch of eggs, you know, like, in big night. That would be great.
That would be great if Gary Oldman was making the perfect omelet like Stanley Tucci.
I will take the Tucci omelet any day, man. Yes, dude. But yeah, so that's the end of that night, I
guess. But yeah, they end up, like, I forget what. Oh yeah, it's they decide that it's time for Carol's parents to meet
the family,
to meet Steven's family.
Yeah,
so like these
Carol hasn't even met them, right?
No, not yet.
Yeah,
they haven't met the she hasn't met the parents.
Yeah,
So but the her parents, they show up, and like, this scene, this sequence is, okay, they had a chance to really do something here.
They did.
And I know that maybe they didn't want to burden the script with, like, you know, like, kind of a predictable, oh, you know, her parents are just going to discriminate against little people, and that they have, like, some, and they have a real problem with it and all that stuff, and like, make them the villains, like, because that would be what we saw coming.
Right.
But the way they pull the rug out from...
Yeah.
The mom reacts to Gary Oldman behind the bar with, oh my God, a little person.
I know, right? The setup makes no sense.
Exactly. She sees Michael J. Anderson, and she goes, oh my God, a little... I mean, like, she's like...
She has this expression of shock on her face. The dad, not so much.
Right.
He just wants another cocktail, for Christ's sake. He's getting loaded at this party.
He is, that guy's totally shithoused.
He looks like he's going to get wasted and play golf.
I know. And then he's got, like, these, like, sea shanties that he sings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks like a good time.
He actually does.
I'd like to hang with this guy. Maybe not the mom.
Yeah, the mom is objectionable.
But from her reactions at the beginning, Carol notices this and is like, Mom, don't.
Right.
Because apparently there's a history of mom saying things she shouldn't be saying.
Right. But that's not what her motivation is. She wants to get something out, get it off her chest, and something that's going unsaid. And of course, we all, just like Carol does, we think she's going to come out and say, I don't want you marrying this guy because you might have little people children. Instead, she says, my grandmother on my mom's side is a quarter Jewish, and we need to have a Jewish ceremony. Will that be a problem?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
I know, right?
I could not believe they let these parents off the hook.
I laughed out loud. Not because the twist of the humor they were going for.
Right.
Because it was just so stupid.
I know. Like, you can't do this. And, like, the whole thing is, like, everybody around the table is just, like, laughing because it was like, a thing they never saw coming. And, like, Steven's
like... Everyone's like, oh, here comes the hate.
Yes.
Oh, no, wait.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, it's something different, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw the thumbnail for this on the Netflix website back in the day, like, you know, 4 years ago when we still had the DVDs, you know? There's a picture of Matthew McConaughey wearing a yarmulke, and I was like, what is this movie? You know? And, I didn't look further into it, but I was like, and then all of a sudden it came to me. I was like, oh shit, that's right. It was this one.
Yeah,
you know?
Right? God, it's stupid.
Yes.
And Rolf chimes in with another joke. Like,
yeah.
Like, if he dies before the wedding, can we go back to Catholic?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I know.
Sure. Right.
Whatever.
Yeah, it sucks. God.
And then we cut to the wedding.
Yeah, we just are right there.
Right.
Thank God the movie's moving along, because I want it to end.
Dude, and I'll tell you real quick here. I never paused the Amazon stream because I didn't want to know how much time I had left, okay, for one thing. But when Stephen and Carol get married and then they go in the car together, I really thought the movie was over.
I thought it was going to fade out and I was going to criticize the crap out of this movie for having that ending. But now I've got a different ending to criticize it for, so I'm still thankful.
But dude, you got your fade out. There's a long fade to black.
Then the music swells.
And I really was expecting the end credits to come.
You get Peter Dinklage saying, "Fiend." You're like, that would be excellent.
Yes. Right.
No. But you get a fake out.
We cut to a brand new movie with a completely different visual style and different tone.
It is something else,
I
right?
couldn't believe it.
We cut to the hospital and little baby Vincent has been born. And we don't know what has happened.
Dude, and when Steven punches the wall in the hospital,
yes.
I was done with him.
I was already done with this guy.
Oh, of course.
I know he was trying,
yes.
But I'm like, all right, dude. Okay, I'm giving him a chance. He's trying.
Yeah.
He still has shades of assholism that pop up,
yeah,
every time he talks, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
But now he's in the hospital. The doctor says we need to keep him here. Run tests, do treatments, because, yes, he does have dwarfism. He punches this drywall like a redneck boyfriend.
I know.
It's insane.
It's a really ugly scene.
Yeah.
You know.
The baby's crying. They're all screaming. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
The doctor is a little person, and the baby is, we've been told, has dwarfism. And, like, it's the kind of child, I mean, like, any brand new newborn child needs 100% of your
right?
love.
Exactly.
And you need a positive atmosphere. And this guy is carrying on like this.
It's like nil by mouth. Like,
I know.
It looks like it.
I know.
What are they doing?
Yeah. It does become really, this kind of weird dungeon quality that the cinematography takes on. And yeah, the tone of it is completely different than the candy-coated bullshit that was there not five minutes ago.
My note says, wedding ends, fade to black with sappy piano.
Yes.
And then it cuts to this. What?
Right.
What? Wow. And the doctor once again says, Carol, hey, I need you to do this stuff. And she's like, I've been reading all the books. I'm prepared. Yeah, here we go.
Yep.
And he's like, now, Steven, I'm going to need you to go talk to someone. You need to talk to a therapist.
Right.
And he goes, I don't need a therapist. I need chromosomes. Like, what? What, dude?
Go fuck
once
yourself.
Once again.
Go fuck just, yourself.
You know what? Maybe these people would be better without you.
You know, and I know we're not supposed to like him, and I know that like ultimately that's the conclusion that we come to.
Yeah.
And the movie is telling you this guy's a jerk, but like you haven't set it up for us to hate him this much until this moment.
Yeah.
You know, and when he's doing this in front of his brand new newborn, I mean, it should be the happiest day of his life, no matter what is going on with the kid.
And you know what? I know the tone's everywhere. I've said that, and I almost want to applaud it for doing shit that we don't expect, because I don't want to see the same exact plot line for every freaking movie like we always get.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it in the right way.
I know.
It just isn't. It's not an earned moment.
I know. That's what it is. We're always talking about the earned moments, and like this movie has not earned this level of like of trauma, you know,
like we should have seen him get a little more belligerent at some point before the wedding. It had to have happened somewhere.
It was a romantic
maybe it got
comedy.
Cut.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. Maybe that's what Peter Dinklage was talking about. Maybe there was like all these gaps that are there were filled in. I don't know. And there was actually something that we missed before we got to the hospital, where there was I guess a sort of important moment for the ending is that like when they're in the honeymoon car, Carol gets out to go specifically say goodbye to Rolf.
Yes.
And she kisses him.
Yeah, she says, "Thank you, Rolf. Thank you for all you've done."
Yes.
He's like, "I didn't do anything." He's like, "You've done so much."
Yes.
That's what Carol tells him.
Right.
She's very appreciative of him for revealing all of Steven's secrets to me.
Yes, I know. Yes. Exactly. For
and letting
me
meet your wonderful family and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And she says, what are you going to do? And he says, I think he's going to go stay at his parents' cabin, you know, off the grid for a while, something like that.
Yeah.
And she says, I think you're wonderful, Rolf, and kisses him, and then goes back to the car.
Right.
And I was like, man, she's really into this guy.
Yeah, she's really...
Our wedding day.
Yeah.
I honestly felt it was more than just, hey, I love what you did for me. I actually felt like she likes him. Mm. Like, she's romantically interested in this guy.
Okay.
I felt it in this scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was weird.
Well, earlier, you remember that really messed up scene? It was like the second time they there's two
when they're
scenes.
Alone in the apartment together. Yes.
Where Stephen and it was Stephen and Carol. Another scene of Stephen and Carol in bed together, and they're
yes.
But something stops them. Something like, you know, makes it so that they don't have sex. But before they got going, Carol said something about like. Because Steven was talking about how Rolf lost his virginity before Steven did.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he said something about, like, he was in some kind of circle jerk with a bunch of little people.
And yeah, that's what she tells him. She's like, you were in a circle jerk with a bunch of little people? I would love to see that.
I would love to see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, they've established that I guess maybe she has some kind of, like, desire.
I'm sure there was one at Jerry's party she could have partaken in.
I guess that's true. That's true. David Alan Greer's house, there's shit going down.
But yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the night when she says, I think you need to go to a therapist.
Yes.
And then he gets, you know, offended again, you know, for the fifth time.
There's something about everything Steven does, like every move he makes, every expression he gives, that is so, like, off-putting and hateful.
Yeah.
And in these moments where he's in bed with Carol are some of the worst.
And it all feels like he's saying, it's your fault you made me feel like this.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't have said that. Now I'm mad.
He's trash.
This guy, dude.
Yeah, yeah. He sucks.
He needs to be at the bottom of a lake somewhere.
Yes, God willing, dude.
But anyway.
Yeah, but he eventually, like after they get the baby home, like some months pass by. And
10 months.
10 months, yes. And like it looks like things are maybe getting a little better, but then he has this blow up.
Yeah, the baby's crying.
Yes.
And he... can't take it.
Right.
That's what he says to Carol. He's like, I just can't take it anymore. He's sitting on the stairs. I can't take it.
Yep.
I don't know what I can do.
Because he knows that the reason that Vincent, the baby, is in pain is because of his condition.
Yeah.
Like his skeletal structure and, you know, all that stuff that happens with little people.
Right.
And he says, it might be better off if I wasn't around.
Yeah. It would be better off if you got emotional help and support and stayed with your wife and child. That might be the right call.
Yeah.
Not you leaving and going partying with the firefighter babes at Jerry's house.
I mean, because that's exactly... He's not going somewhere to find himself. He's doing exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
He is, like, wanting to have a different lifestyle. And he's not taking responsibility for anything that he's done. And... You know, of all bad characters in movies, I mean, Steven Bedalia, as we find out.
I know, his name is Bedalia. Now Carol's name is Bedalia.
Know,
what
exactly.
A waste.
Wow. Oh, this sucks. but yeah, he is quite far up there. I mean, I don't want to give him that much credit because then that would put this movie in like the...
I'm
going to
put him ahead
air.
Of Ennis Del Mar as far as selfishness goes. And you know, I ranked him pretty high.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Steven Bedalia outranks Ennis Del Mar as far as selfishness goes.
Well, all right. Geez,
I mean, Ennis Del Mar is such a better person.
Yes, of course.
But
yes, right.
But as far as just selfishness goes, you know,
I see
he's
what
up
you
there.
Mean. Yes,
he's
exactly. Yeah, because Ennis Del Mar, he abandoned a job and he left his wife hanging. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, he left everyone.
That's true.
Because he's selfish. Anyway,
yes.
By the way, that's a way better movie than Tiptoes.
Yeah.
Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain, yes.
Watch that, please,
yes,
everybody.
Yes, please, everybody.
Anyway, yeah, So back to this movie. He's sitting on that spiral staircase. I just wish it would have collapsed on him and impaled him in 4,000 places.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, she ends up like going to... Rolf has that property in the forest.
We get a scene of Dinklage and Patricia Arquette arguing about feminism.
Yeah.
For some reason, doesn't need to be in this movie.
I guess it's just to have like something for them to do because they're characters in the film.
Like, I'm all for talking about issues like this, but these characters are completely superfluous. Just have him up there chilling, Rolf up there chilling, you know, by himself thinking about things.
Right.
That's all you need.
Right. But you know, they're there as kind of a constant, kind of just, like presence there. They're always arguing and like it gets it. At first you're thinking, okay, this is just a cute back and forth, but then they start like actually sniping at each other and being real spiteful.
Yeah.
And you're like thinking, okay, this is not a good environment for this child, or really for Rolf or for Carol. Carol would like some peace and quiet to raise her child. And Rolf has made it clear that like, you know, you could stay here as long as you want. This my house is yours.
Yeah. I mean, cause when Carol shows up, this is like right after that blow up. When she shows up, we don't know what the resolution was to that. She just shows up. Hey, Rolf, Steven and I are separated. What? Yes. Really?
Yes.
This movie is jumping through time. This is a Bill and Ted movie.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
But yeah, he says stay here as long as you want, right?
Right.
And she's sleeping in the bedroom with baby Vincent, right? Is Vincent the name?
Vincent, yes.
And there's a scene when Rolf comes in the middle of the night and he takes the baby out of the bassinet and he goes downstairs and is holding it and coddling it,
right,
you know, on the couch, the sofa down there, and just admiring it
for
what it is, a sweet baby child.
Right.
His nephew.
And this is the first he's meeting his nephew.
Yeah.
Apparently for 10 months, like they didn't bring the baby over to the family.
Yeah.
We find, I mean, that is so sad.
Yeah.
And he obviously, yes, he absolutely loves Vincent sight unseen. He just like immediately, this is okay. I'm going to take care of this child while he's here. And like the baby, he's just a natural.
Right. And this is the moment that choked me up a little bit.
Okay.
Because in the moment I really felt Rolf has lived so long with unmet needs.
That's true.
And this is fulfilling something that he's been missing.
Yeah.
Sally's not treating him well. Like, no one treats him well, really. Even his friend Maurice is kind of a shithead. Yes. Like, he's not really in an environment that provides him with what he should have and what he deserves.
Yeah.
Because he's a good person. He really is.
Oh, yeah, he is.
And so when he's holding this baby looking at it, I'm like, man, he wishes this was his kid.
Right.
He really does.
And, like, Carol comes downstairs, you know, to check on him and, like, and she's really happy to see, you know, her baby being, you know, cared for in this way.
Yeah.
And she like tries to relieve him and he goes, oh no, you go to bed. I'll take care of him.
Yeah.
And she's very impressed by that.
She's kind of shocked.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Steven wasn't doing that.
Right.
Talking about unmet needs. This is what she's been needing.
Yes. And we're getting a sense of where this is going.
Oh God, we are, Dave.
Yes. Right.
So the next morning, Steven shows up.
Yeah.
Looking just like an asshole. Yes. He comes up. I mean, he apparently phoned them. And how old am I? He phoned them and said he was coming. They knew he was coming, right? Sent him a telegram.
They tried to wash the windows.
So he shows up and he walks up and he sees Vincent and he's kind of like being a little sweet on him a little bit because it's his son and he hasn't seen him. And he's talking to Carol about everything. And she's like, well, I know you love him, but you're just too self-involved in all this stuff. And he's like, he still does the asshole thing here.
Of course
he's
he
like, wait, you mean I don't love him? You don't think I love him? She's like, no, you know, she's like backpedaling on things she's saying because this guy's an abusive asshole narcissist.
I know. Because his manner is so threatening that, and like Rolf is over, like kind of walking around, just walking the ground.
Yeah,
while
he's
they
walking
have
in
talk.
The background, kind of like, yeah. He's ready to run in there and, you know, save the day if he has to.
Yeah.
And as he leaves, he's like, you know, I think they're trying to talk about, are we going to make it work or not? And he basically says, nope.
Right.
No, we're not making this work.
And she told him, too, that, like, unless you get some help, unless you face these issues, this is not going to work. You know?
Yeah. And so he basically says, no, I'm out. And he leaves, and he walks past Rolf, and Gary Oldman says, are you mad at me? And I'm like, what are you implying here? What? Right. Mad at me?
Right.
And he says, no, I'm not mad at you, which is good. My note here was all capital letters. Are they together now? Gary Oldman and Kate Beckinsale? Then we get one more scene of him, like, lighting a fire at night, you know, having a little bonfire, hanging out. And they're looking at the stars, the two of them, Kate Beckinsale and Gary Oldman, holding the baby. And she looks at him and says, it's okay if you kiss me, Rolf. And then he goes and kisses her. And I'm shitting my pants on the couch. Like, what is happening in this movie? What has just happened? Credits. I'm sweating. What?
Dave. I'm...
Your take.
Okay, once again, let's rewind the whole film.
Okay.
Play it again in your head with Peter Dinklage in the Rolf role. Okay? That sounded weird, but you go with it, okay?
I was about to say, I am not going to think about this again. Okay, but you swap the actors. Okay, I'll think about it.
Gary Oldman doesn't exist in this film, okay?
There's no Maurice, which means there's no Gary Oldman.
Exactly. So Maurice and Patricia Arquette, they just don't exist. Forget about watching the whole movie again, but just think of, like, this particular scene or the one that came before it. If Peter Dinklage is Rolf, now you've got something. You might have something.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be something where we go, oh my God, this is totally fucked. You know? We wouldn't say they have truly committed some kind of, like, mortal sin here. We'd be like, okay, I get this.
I kind of get it.
I can
see. It still sucks.
But
that casting choice. But yeah, wow, you blew my mind with the casting. Yes, it would make sense.
Right.
It probably made sense the second you read the script. It would make sense to do that.
I mean, dude.
I know in 2002, Peter Dinklage wasn't Peter Dinklage yet. But he was still a phenomenal actor. He still had roles at that time.
I know.
Like, Living in Oblivion, that was out, right?
It was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he's now become, like, maybe not a name, but
he's in things.
Recognizable.
He's a face.
Yes.
People have seen him in stuff.
I mean, and you've cast him in your movie. He's standing right there. How do you not see this? How did he not just walk into the audition and you go, oh my God, that's Rolf?
I know. Dinklage is on the record saying something about the casting choice of Oldman. He said he's not going to get into the political correctness, but it's freaking Gary Oldman. Let him do what he wants. No.
Yes, I know.
No. Don't let him do what he wants. Do the right thing and cast Peter Dinklage.
And with Peter Dinklage, what he said, those remarks, I mean, yes, he is absolutely entitled to whatever he wants to say, but, like, I just like what you said, I disagree.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, I think that he might be defending him as a fellow actor, you know? There's probably just part of that fraternity, you know? And he also, like, he must really admire Gary Oldman, which I'm sure, like, all actors do.
Yeah.
And the chance to work with him is a big deal. But I just cannot sanction this role.
No.
You know?
No.
And when he is on his knees in that last scene and he kisses Kate Beckinsale, I'm sorry. I whatever message they're trying to send about, like, oh, you know, a little person and a normal sized person found happiness together, that's a lovely thing, but you didn't use a little person. You know?
Right.
Whatever statement you were trying to make, you have not made it.
Yeah, and I think they failed at that throughout the entire film constantly.
Fundamentally, yes.
The entire thing.
Right.
And just this fear that Steven has of having a child that's a little person, there's some truth to that because of the medical issues. You want your baby to be safe, like you said.
Yes.
But he has this irrational fear of it, it seems like.
Then on top of that, for him to carry on the way he did in that hospital room in front of, like, in front of his child.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they're in the second to last scene where he's breaking up, when him and Carol are breaking up, he goes over to the bassinet and he just like starts, "Hey, little man," you know, and he just kind of like starts, you know, like playing with his hand and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like kind of looking like he's like feeling some love for this child, which he should have had before.
Right.
Then he walks over to Rolf, and before he leaves, he says, "Love my son."
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, dude, that's real noble.
Yeah,
you know,
great guy.
Yes.
I would have loved for some redemption for Steven.
Mm.
I would have loved it.
Okay.
Even though he went so far that I just hated his guts.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see him at least say, like, "I did get into therapy, but, you
right.
know, we'll see where that goes." And then he still leaves, and he's... Heck, his brother could still be banging Kate Beckinsale. I don't care.
Sure.
Go for it.
Yeah, of course.
Do what you got to do.
Whatever. Right.
But I would have loved to see, "Hey, I'm going to at least try a little." I would have liked that.
How about we like have like 2 more minutes of the movie where it like flashes forward 18 years and Vincent is graduating high school and like Kate Beckinsale and Gary Oldman and Matthew McConaughey are all there. And we find out that like, you know, like Steven got married to somebody else. And it turns out he's been there all along. He's like been, they just, you know, had like dual custody of the child.
Right.
And we find out that like, you know, like little Vincent said, "Boy, I'm sure glad dad got therapy. And I'm sure, you know, so-and-so."
Right.
And then like, you know, like Rolf and Carol are holding hands. And everything is exactly the way it is. But like, there was a true redemption story for all the characters.
We could have,
you know. Could they have achieved that in 3 minutes? It's tough to say, but like, I don't know.
But would we buy that? Would we even care? I don't know.
If Peter Dinklage was playing Rolf, probably.
Okay. This all hinges on that, right?
It does.
This one choice,
it does.
Man.
Right.
That one choice has been... It's the reason we're talking about this movie.
Of course. Of course. Because, I mean, like, it would have been just another forgettable 2002, you know, dramatic film that
right.
maybe just didn't quite work if,
right.
if they had cast it correctly.
Maybe we would watch it one day because we're Dinklage fans. You
yeah,
know, be like,
yeah.
"Oh, let's check out the Dinklage catalog."
Right.
You know,
right.
"Oh, you ever see that movie Tiptoes?" I don't know why they call it that, but.
yeah.
But Dinklage was great as
exactly.
Rolf.
Right. And it was totally not problematic.
All the points they were trying to make landed excellently.
It was a hell of a thing.
The world has changed.
Right.
Oh my gosh, dude. Wow. Okay, Dave.
Yeah.
Anything else on this thing we watched?
Normally, I have a bunch of stuff that like I saved in my notes that I wanted to get to and everything because it's like, "Oh, hey, everybody, like, you know, get ready for my stunning comments to end the show." I got nothing here. I've already said everything I can. And yeah, it's just this is Tiptoes, ladies and gentlemen.
I bought this on DVD for this occasion.
Get out of town.
Yeah, I own this. And you know what? I did buy it. Because I wanted a copy before they found them all and burned them.
Yes.
You know, they got this. Song of the South is there.
Yeah.
They're going to Gone with the Wind. They're throwing them in the garbage pile that they're incinerating.
Yes,
so I got a copy. Tiptoes, everybody. Dave,
wow.
Would you recommend this movie?
Okay. It's I'm going to say absolutely not. But like... Just look up some clips on YouTube or just Google image some stuff.
Yeah.
Just so you can see what we're talking about. If you
yeah.
haven't seen, I would never recommend anybody see this movie, but yeah,
no.
just look at so that you know why we're so outraged.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it today. We're as we record this, everyone, there was a solar eclipse. Don't look at it.
Yes, that's right.
Don't look at it.
Make sure that your local library gives you protective glasses when you watch Tiptoes.
Exactly,
you
everybody.
Know?
All right, so that wraps things up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. That gets more dudes listening to the dudes. You can also go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yep, and we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies, and our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com.
That's right, and Dave, we have a question of the week. What is the question of the week?
What are the most embarrassing parts of the careers of your favorite actors or filmmakers?
That's right. Think hard and long about it and let us know. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned next week when we do 1991's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, directed by Kevin Reynolds and starring Kevin Costner. So until next week, when we have a brand new coat of paint, everybody, don't forget that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And we'll see you next time.